Good evening and welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is Pete Myers, the co-founder of the Tompkins County Living Wage Coalition and the Workers' Rights Center. Welcome to the show, Pete.
Thank you so much, Tish.
Before we get into the various projects and campaigns that your organizations are involved in, I'd like you to tell us a little bit about the impetus in your life to start getting involved in these issues.
Good question. That takes me back in my history a little bit. Well, really what gave me the impetus initially was when I was 23, after I got a master's degree in psychology and moved to New York City, and not long after moving there, got a job as a drug counselor in inner city high school in Brooklyn. And that was my initial just impetus, having grown up a middle class kid in Indiana. Here I am working in New York City and beginning to see racism in all of its manifestations right in front of my eyes, working with the students I was working with. And at the same time, in the middle of this four-year experience in the high school, I also traveled to Nicaragua, a country in Central America, during the revolution in that country in 1986. And the United States was trying to overthrow that revolution. So between the experiences I was seeing in the high school and in New York City with racism, and beginning to see the kind of what was going on with the United States around the world, I began to see I was going to commit the rest of my life to trying to create a more just world. That was my first real kind of being politicized, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. And so that brings us to the Living Wage Coalition, which you have founded and are definitely working on at this point. In your mission statement, you say you have a coalition of organizations and groups and people working on this. Who are some of the other people who are networking with you to facilitate this issue?
Well, we're working with, two major groups of people that seem really different. On one hand, I think a big commitment of ours is actually to engage people who are most affected by a lack of a living wage, who are feeling abused at their workplace. We're trying to engage them in our movement, and that's always a challenge, but it's always something we're working for, and we've had some successes with that. The other group of people is community leaders trying to engage people both in elected positions, religious leaders, union leaders, in our work, and basically saying that this is a value that's important to us, that it's a moral value, in fact.
Mm-hmm. When you say it's a challenge to get people involved, what do you mean by that?
On the first note, in the first group of people, the people who are most affected generally speaking, don't have an experience of activism or organizing. And in fact, just speaking bluntly, it's sometimes there are actually class differences between those of us who are actually organizing and the people that we want to organize, and letting go of that we're organizing them, but we're organizing together, in fact.
Mm-hmm. So do you actually go to people, or do they come to you and then you take on the issue?
That's a good question. But, I think one of the reasons we started the Workers' Rights Center, it was about 2 years ago, May, actually. We've actually had today we had our 340th case in less than 2 years. So we have a lot of people coming to us. And really, one of the reasons we started that was to actually is to have, for a lot of people, the living wage issue, a lot of people agree with it, but it seems like a pipe dream in the future. Mm-hmm. With workers' rights issues, we're putting ourselves out there as helping people, advocating for people, going to bat for people with an issue that they've experienced today, or they've been fired from a job. So we've gotten those people in our door, and that gives us a chance to actually work with them and organize with them beyond just that issue.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to talk to you about one of your most successful campaigns, and that was organizing the paraprofessionals in mm-hmm. the Ithaca City School District to enact a living wage. What were some of the challenges and obstacles in that fight?
That was actually a relatively easy campaign, because the Ithaca paraprofessionals, teachers aides, teaching assistants, had a union there already that was more than willing to work with us. I think some of the obstacles was encouraging the union at first to kind of believe that they were worth more. I mean, the same union had negotiated a contract for itself of, starting people at $6.70 an hour, mm-hmm. which was, we were saying, the Living Wage Coalition was saying, you deserve more than that. And it took some talking the union into that, to believing that. Mm-hmm. It's mostly lower income women, generally speaking, who are paraprofessionals in the schools. Not entirely women, but like 85%. Mm-hmm. I would say that was the biggest obstacle. And once we convinced them that they were worth more, after the campaign, Their starting wage is $9.40 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a very big increase. In fact, the head of that union, Debbie Minnick, travels around the country talking about, you know, a living wage campaign for paraprofessionals and how to kind of do that with community groups such as they did with us.
Were some of the paraprofessionals afraid to make waves? I've heard that in other communities.
Yeah, I think so. But actually, one of the more real issues was kind of the issue of wage compression, which basically that, you know, somebody who was there a longer period of time certainly was making more than $6.70 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody making much more like, say, $14 an hour, were they going to have to give up some amount of their increase for the lowest people to be brought up?
And how was that worked out?
I think it was just very carefully crafted with, you know, I think Debbie Minnick, the union head, was very, you know, communicated a lot with people and just, you know, convinced them that, you know, it was, which we thought, the Living Wage Coalition took the position that we want to raise the people at the very bottom up, and I think that that was accomplished.
Well, what do you say to your detractors? And I've heard some arguments that, especially for small businesses, that a living wage would be a hardship, might cause layoffs and so on. What's your argument against that?
Well, simply speaking, that a person who has, you know, that was making $5.15 an hour, now the minimum wage is $6 an hour. That was another, we played a major role in that campaign, at least in upstate New York. People who don't have a lot of money are much more likely to spend their money locally. So, you know, small businesses are going to be the recipients of people who all of a sudden have more money to spend.
So that's part of your argument?
Right. Yeah, I know enough small businesses that do pay people much above the minimum wage. You know, and you know, we're sympathetic somewhat to small businesses. I mean, you know, I mean, if you compare a small business to, you know, Walmart, for example, which is another one of our campaigns.
We're going to get into that.
It's a lot easier for Walmart to do it. We're saying Walmart can afford to do better. You know, but I do know enough small businesses that do pay their people relatively well, even compared to a multinational corporation.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's turn to Walmart. You are tackling the behemoth at this point. And it says in your literature that this is one of the first campaigns in the country to try to get them to enact a living wage for local workers.
Right.
Now, this is separate from the union movements that we've heard about.
Yes.
What are your tactics?
Well, I think one of the main things we recognize is, say, you know, your listening audience is probably wide and varied in geographics as well. We have a large, what you might call progressive or left community in Ithaca, for example, that would very willingly boycott Walmart, and no doubt they are doing that now. But then we have a large segment of the population that loves Walmart. When I first moved to Ithaca, I worked as a social worker for 3 years with Catholic Charities in a welfare-to-work program, and most of the people that I work with were looking forward to Walmart coming. You know, so we're very aware that a lot of people like Walmart, perceive that Walmart has the lowest prices, and we've taken the strategy that we're not trying to get Walmart to leave. There are certainly a lot of people in Ithaca that would like to see Walmart not be here,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, we're just facing the reality. They're here, they can afford to pay a living wage, and they're actually robbing us, the taxpayers, and the workers who are working there. They're robbing them.
Is this movement for the local Walmart coming from you guys, or have some of the workers and potential workers come to you and asked you to take on this issue?
No, this has definitely come from us. They've only been open for about 2 months
mm-hmm.
now. So, you know,
mm-hmm.
one of our hopes is to better network with workers, and I think we probably will after mm-hmm. people have been there a little while, you know.
How are you going to do that? What kind of tactics are you going to use?
I'm not quite sure yet. We're talking about, you know, all the time we're thinking, what can we do so as to not alienate people? You know, we have literature, and some literature, for example, that's very much couched in workers' rights that we've thought about putting on people's windshields, you know, of workers
mm-hmm.
there. And we're actually thinking about, can we get people within our ranks to go work there?
You're listening to Out of Bounds on WEOS. I'm Tish Perlman, and my guest is Pete Myers, the co-founder of the Living Wage Coalition. Pete, I wanted to ask you, when Walmart first opened, I remember seeing some literature in the city and around the city asking people to write to the manager of Walmart and ask for a living wage mm-hmm. and fairness to workers. Did you get any response or any kind of satisfaction from that?
Well, we've had about 130 letters written, but we're also doing petitions as well because people won't people are a lot less likely to take time to write a full letter. Mm-hmm. And we've probably had about close to 2,000 people sign petitions. Mm-hmm. We've actually had a negotiation, an initial negotiation with Walmart, with a local general manager that we took part in. We got the mayor involved with the chair of the county legislature, Tim Joseph, mm-hmm. a religious leader, somebody on the school board was a part of that meeting. And we got initial wage information, just what their starting wage, which in Ithaca is they're starting people at $6.50 an hour.
Mm-hmm. And that's not usual? Is it usually minimum wage?
That's probably, I imagine they did some amount of research to find out what other big box retailers were paying. I mean, and that's probably within the range. I mean, Target, we understand, starts people at $6.75. So, mm-hmm. It's certainly, we're not saying that, like, Walmart is so much worse in terms of wages than the other big boxes, except for the fact that their profit, is twice that of all the big boxes mm-hmm. put together, mm-hmm. and they can afford to do better. But so in this negotiation, we actually asked for a wage structure for people there, a comprehensive wage structure, which they've promised to give us, and they haven't in the 2 months since we had that meeting. So we're kind of debating right now as to what the next step with that is. We're not under any illusion that, mm-hmm. Walmart is all of a sudden going to pay a living wage in the Ithaca Walmart. I mean, we'd all be on the cover of Time and Newsweek, basically, if that happened. But, this takes part within a larger kind of national campaign. The unions are getting together. There's a lot of different stuff coming from a lot of different angles at Walmart, and they are majorly on the defensive. Last week, they hit two-year all-time low on Wall Street, so they're taking a real hit from many different directions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have been hearing about, and I also heard that once they were unionized up in Quebec, that they have now closed the store. Did you hear that?
Yeah, it was kind of, that was like a opening salvo to the rest of the country, or to the United States and Canada, that if you try to unionize your Walmart, we'll close your store down.
Have you talked to any of the workers and found that they're resistant to this and worried about their jobs and...
Not any Walmart workers specifically have mm-hmm. we spoken to, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And I think the people would be actually probably afraid to talk to us while they were actually working there.
I would assume so.
And that was, when I was, talking, this idea of putting workers' rights flyers in people's cars, how would people perceive that? We're very hyper, we might... At times, we may be too hypersensitive to what people's perceptions would be. But, like, for example, there were some people in Ithaca that thought we should have a protest in front of Walmart when it opened up in late January, and we decided to not do that because so many people, would say, there they go again. Mm-hmm. Basically, with kind of the protest kind of tactics mm-hmm. in Ithaca.
Ithaca and their protests.
Right.
Constant protests.
And we're trying to not
yeah.
beat up on people who like Walmart or who work at Walmart, basically.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think the next step would be, though? Would you boycott, organize a boycott of some sort if you don't get any satisfaction?
Well, that's a really good question because I think our next step is really more getting out more substantially into communities, particularly into rural communities, knocking on doors, setting tables up in places where we can do that, and actually talking to people. I would actually say that we don't have the real capacity yet to do a functioning boycott that's really going to do anything. I think we need to be talking to a lot more people. We're, setting up meetings at churches with union groups and stuff. And, the unions could play a major role in this. Mm-hmm. And a lot of union members also shop at Walmart. So,
That would be very interesting, wouldn't it?
Right.
What I've heard people say... Why are they targeting Walmart? What about all these other mm-hmm. big boxes that don't pay a living wage? What's your answer to that?
Expand upon that. Certainly, just the fact that Walmart last year just went over the $10 billion mark, that's for last year's profits alone. All the other stores are so much lower than that. And, if we can take on Walmart successfully, that's more likely to have a chain reaction than if we take on a much smaller player, even a Target. Mm-hmm. So, that's kind of our strategy, and we have limited resources. We welcome, I do see us at some level going to a broader level. Like if Walmart, mm-hmm. for example, we got some negotiations going with them, and they said, well, this is fine, but, we can't raise our wages like this if other places aren't going to do it as well, then we would also start communicating with the other places at that mm-hmm. time.
Mm-hmm. Do you think... What I'd like to ask you is, as far as you know, is Walmart one of the biggest corporations that seems to be afraid of unionizing?
To my knowledge, I mean, I think there are many corporations that really are anti-union, mm-hmm. but you don't hear of it to the extent that you hear of it.
Yeah, their tactics,
Walmart.
They almost right. seem to be Gestapo.
Right. I mean, I have heard of workers here at this store here, you know, are basically presented with very anti-union kinds of videos right from as soon as they start working there.
Mm-hmm. I worked for a time at Borders in San Francisco for about 2 weeks, mm. and they were incredibly anti-union. They mm-hmm. were almost mm-hmm. threatening about it.
Right.
So it's certainly right. not surprising that Walmart would be following
right.
the same suit.
Right.
To tell us about some more of the actions you've taken for living wage, other businesses and other successes that you might have had.
Well, we had a success, you know, with Green Star. It must have been about a year and a half ago. Kind of a local food co-op, which is a fairly large-sized grocery store, really, mm-hmm. in Ithaca, with over 100
we
employees.
We have two stores here now.
Now we have two mm-hmm. stores. We worked with the management and with the board there to get them to pay a living wage.
I'm surprised that they weren't already as a co-op. I was actually
yeah.
surprised by that, and so were others that I spoke to about
yeah,
this.
They definitely weren't, yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have the hopes of developing a business task force, which would kind of be spearheaded by people, business people, that would encourage other businesses to pay a living wage. Yeah.
Did Green Star try to come up with a tactic that it would break them if they did that? Or were they pretty much, you know, compliant?
No, you know, I mean, you know, it's a complicated situation because, like, with are there mitigating circumstances? So, like, Green Star basically claimed, and we accepted, you know, and some people really might disagree with this, the fact that they give a discount on their food to mm-hmm. members, you know, and that we did accept that as part of what could make up a living wage package. So a living wage is basically made up, you take the look at all the various necessities in life, housing, food, mm-hmm. clothing, telephone, rent, that kind of thing. And, you know, if a company could demonstrate they're helping to meet one of those needs without actual monetary cash, then, you know, we could figure that into the equation. Now, it's funny that, you know, Green Star could figure out, you know, Green Star isn't a little mom and pop deli necessarily.
No.
But, you know, it's not anywhere near the size, obviously, of Walmart. And mm-hmm. Walmart basically says that they, you know, the chief executive officer last week said that we couldn't afford it. Our profit margin was not large enough to afford a living wage, which is like kind of, you know, after they made $10 billion last year, it just seems a little bit disingenuous to say that.
Yeah, that's pushing it. I'm surprised workers don't get upset about statements like that.
Well, you know, a lot of there are workers that work at Walmart that find it to be a better work environment than where they had been before. You know, there are some places out there that are really bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Walmart seems, you know, there are people at this Walmart that are traveling from, you know, 50 miles away to come work here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have heard that. Yeah, and also for some of the other businesses that have opened up, people were very excited about it.
Right.
Other aspects of your Workers' Rights Center. I want to talk about your Peace and Justice Center and gift shop, but it's actually a physical center, right,
mm-hmm.
on the Commons.
Yes.
Tell us what's going on there.
We're located above Autumn Leaves Used Books, owned by Joe Wetmore. Joe is a friend of the progressive community, so to speak, and has rented out this large space to us upstairs. And we have, I think, 9 different groups that are kind of part of this incipient Peace and Justice Center. And, you know, all loosely affiliated with each other, and we're the main group that kind of sponsors the other groups being in that space.
Mm-hmm. And what are some of these groups doing? Working on anti-war issues and peace
various
issues?
Like one group is the Tompkins County Healthcare Task Force, which is advocating for universal health care. Mm-hmm. Then right across the aisle from them is the Ithaca Health Fund, which is basically people local to Ithaca, actually in New York State and around the country, can actually buy health insurance from the Ithaca Health Fund, and it costs $100 a year. And it doesn't cover everything, but, you know, it actually covers more than my catastrophic insurance through my job covers, shame
no
to
kidding.
Say, you know, which, you know, you have to have a deductible of $2,250, you know, and I had to go to the hospital last year for something, and they wouldn't pay anything, but Health Fund did. Ithaca Hours is there, which is Ithaca's alternative currency. Books Through Bars is there. Actually, a new project that we're starting which is having a separate space, is called the Immigrant Rights Center.
I was going to bring that up.
Specifically for immigrants, and this kind of stems out of our case that we had about a year and a half ago with, we were visited by a few workers from Collegetown Pizzeria up in Collegetown in Ithaca, and evidently, allegedly, this pizzeria owner was trafficking in undocumented workers coming through an employment agency in New York City, and the owner was paying them like in the range of $4 or $4.50 an hour, and not overtime. They were working like 60, 70 hours a week.
Where were these people from?
Generally Central and South America. Mm-hmm. So we contacted, after developing a trusting relationship with one of the guys, which led to him bringing the other guys in, because that wasn't an easy thing for these workers to come in at all. You know, they don't know if we're a government agency that's going to have them deported or any, you know, they don't know what. So we contacted the Attorney General's office, Elliot Spitzer's office, which has led to a very fruitful relationship, and I have been very impressed with that, the Attorney General's office, their work, and they successfully got a settlement with this pizzeria for $7,500. And we've had a couple other cases, and we have actually a big case that you're going to hear about in a couple weeks in downtown Ithaca at a restaurant.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, what about Kinko's? Didn't you do something for the workers at Kinko's?
Yeah, that was the case that we worked with the Attorney General's office through, too. You know, a lot of these cases that come through the Workers' Rights Center, we could also go to either the United States Department of Labor or the New York State Department of Labor, and those can take years, and the Attorney General's office can do it in months.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the Kinko's case was basically workers working overtime and then the manager going in and deleting their hours. They recorded their hours on a computer.
Uh-huh.
And this was discovered, and we were able to successfully discover it, and the Attorney General was able to, you know, get another monetary settlement again.
The guys in the white hats come and save the day again.
Right.
When I first met you, you were involved in the Rockefeller drug law reforms. How is that going? Are you happy with some of the reforms that were enacted?
That's a good question. No, ultimately not. I mean, they weren't nearly far-reaching enough.
A lot of people said that, yeah.
You know, it's always an interesting question to think about reform efforts. You know, we were very happy, maybe a contradiction is we were very happy with the increase in the minimum wage. And some people would say, oh, it's $6 an hour, that's really not enough, and of course we would agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's lifting the most amount of people.
You're talking about some of the actions that the legislature took.
Right.
And
this
was one of them, the Rockefeller drug laws and the minimum wage.
Right.
Uh-huh. A lot of people probably remember that you ran an ultimately unsuccessful but a very good campaign for sheriff a number of years ago. Do you foresee another run for office, or do you feel like you're more, in some ways, more, a little bit more freedom as an activist?
When I ran for sheriff, it was, you know, it's funny because I think I was successful. One of the issues, which is an issue to people throughout the WEOS listening area, I think, is the State Corrections Commission, telling very strongly counties that they must build a new county jail.
Mm.
And that was one of the issues that I talked about here, that was ridiculous. And I think there's been a galvanizing community, and I think there's other people that has definitely put a lot of energy into that issue.
Mm-hmm.
Running for office, I think, can be a really good thing to get issues out. At this point, for me personally, I don't know if it makes sense again unless I really thought I had a chance to win. When I ran for sheriff 2 years ago, I was running as a third-party candidate.
Mm-hmm.
And you
mainly wanted to put issues on the table,
right.
But you were very successful at doing
right.
I must say.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, I got 38% of the vote in the city of Ithaca as a third-party. Mm-hmm. But I encourage more people to actually think about running for office.
I would, too. I find it a little bit upsetting that so many people get into office, especially in this area, without having to even campaign, because there's no one running
right.
against them.
Exactly.
People are turned off by running for office these days. What's you say there's something coming up soon that we're going to hear about in regard to living wage?
With regards to workers' rights more.
Oh, it's the workers' rights issue.
Right.
Is there anything you're going to be tackling in regard to living wage? How about the other schools in the area, school districts? Would living wage in Tompkins County get involved in, say, the Lansing school district?
I think we would if there was somebody, if there was a union that asked us to work with them. that's the critical thing. If somebody came forward, if a union or not, I mean, you know, one of the real difficulties for us is, in addition to our living wage work, we're doing a workers' rights center where, you know, it's like we're close to about maxed out. So to take on a new campaign with this Walmart campaign, we're setting up a whole kind of like a door-to-door situation and getting people ready to do that. So I'm not sure that it's, we would try to figure it out how to do it if somebody came to us. But I don't think we could provide the impetus. And that was the difference with the Ithaca paraprofessionals. There was a union already there that was willing to provide the impetus. If that didn't exist, we probably wouldn't.
If somebody wants to get involved in the Living Wage Coalition, do you have memberships, or can people just walk in and say, I want to get involved and start a project or join a project?
Well, they certainly could give us a call at our offices, which is 607-269-0409. We also have a website, www.tcLivingWage.org. And then we actually have a website for our Walmart campaign at www.walmartlivingwage.org. And, you know, actually something I should mention is I think we do plan to kind of, thinking of your listening audience, would like to somehow regionalize our Walmart campaign. So if there's actually somebody in another county outside of Tompkins that wants to figure out how to do a living wage campaign around their local Walmart, not necessarily fight a Walmart that's not there yet, but wanting to deal with the living wage issue for an already existing Walmart, I think we really want to ramp up in that direction, so please call our offices. Again, that was 607-269-0409.
How is the Living Wage Coalition and the Workers' Rights Center funded? Do you have grants?
It's, you know, we basically are diversify, so to speak. One thing I've learned the hard way, my coworker Carl Foyer, who is unfortunately not able to be here today, is much better in terms of grants as part of what we get from both public grants and private foundation grants, as well as a lot of individual fundraising. We actually started this Peace and Justice gift shop, and feel free, all of you out there in the radio land, to come and check this out in the comments. You know, it's kind of like as another way to raise money. I mean, you know, it's any way we can, we raise money. And, you know, for me personally, this has been my, you know, my dream job in a certain way. So, you know, I'm going to figure out a way to make this happen. But, you know, we're getting money from a lot of different places.
And how many people actually are involved?
Depends on how you look at it. We have an email listserv of 800 people. Now, all those people are not actively involved, unless, except that they're getting an email. We have a steering committee of probably about 30 people, and an average meeting is about 15 people. We have two paid organizers, which is myself and Carl Foyer. And, you know, people are involved at various levels, basically.
And how often do you meet?
Once a month.
And people can bring issues to the table, and you can say yay or nay on them?
Yeah, and the critical thing is if you, Tish Perlman, were going to come to a meeting and you said you wanted to work on this issue, probably what we would say is we encourage you to take that ball and we'll help support you in that.
So you have to be pretty autonomous in order to work and not expect a group to...
Well, you would have to sell it to people, you know. But you would certainly be encouraged to do that. And the steering committee is open to people.
So I guess we'll be hearing in the future what's going to be happening with the Walmart issue. I'm sure you
Definitely.
Will come forward with some tactics, depending on what happens.
Right.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Tish.
We wish you well.
I'm very excited about this new show. I will be listening every week.
Great. Thank you.
Sure.
Out of Bounds is produced by Tim Reppert at Rep Studio in Ithaca. We're being sponsored by the Women's Interfaith Institute in Seneca Falls and by Professor Joe LaQuatra. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. Please plan to join me next week for another segment of Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman.